Matthew 25 for a couple of weeks already, and we've taken it a piece at a time. Jesus has been telling these parables. So remembering our context, this is in Jerusalem. This is happening after Palm Sunday. Jesus had his triumphal entry. He spends the next day at the temple, and we have a couple of readings that come from his teaching at the temple. And then the week continues to pass, and he is teaching more as the week goes on. And that's where we're catching the different parables of Matthew 25. Now, as you're looking at your Bibles, and you can tell that 46 is the last one, if you go just a little further into chapter 26, when Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified." So, that's it. 25 is the end. And everything that happens from 26 to the end of Matthew is basically the triduum, the end of Holy Week. It's Monday, Thursday, it's Good Friday, it's Holy Saturday, it's Easter Sunday. So we're really finishing teaching and preaching with these verses, which makes sense, I think, because this is the last Sunday of Pentecost, the season after Pentecost, and it's the last Sunday of the liturgical year. So Christ the King Sunday, we're finishing this year at the end of the teaching portion of Matthew. There's more Matthew to come, but it's all kind of Holy Week and Easter. But as far as the teachings of Jesus, we conclude here. And our liturgical year concludes here. So it's kind of a long one. I think I will read this one and just kind of burn through it kind of quick. So follow along, please. "When the Son of Man comes into his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate them one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep at his right hand, but the goats at the left. And the king will say to those at his right hand, 'Come, O blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me.' And the righteous will answer him, 'Lord, when did we see thee hungry and feed thee, or thirsty and give thee drink? And when did we see thee a stranger and welcome thee, or naked and clothe thee? And when did we see the sick or in prison and visit thee?' And the king will answer them, 'Truly I say to you, you did it to one of the least of these of my brethren, you did it to me.' Then he will say to those at his left hand, 'Depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me.' Then they also will answer, 'Lord, when did we see thee hungry, or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister to thee?' Then he will answer them, 'Truly I say to you, as you did it not to one of the least of these, you did it not to me.' And they will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life." Okay. So we've got our context about when and how this is happening. What about the context for this being the Christ the King reading? What do you think about that? Last reading of the liturgical year. How does it strike you as a final reading?
Like the final judgment.
Like final judgment. Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of works as far as I'm concerned. That, you know, it's kind of an end times message at the end of our gospel story. You know, by next Sunday, we'll start an Advent, and we're going to start all over again. So it's sort of a concluding and summarizing teaching. Let's have that in mind, that, you know, there's something I think extra significant about something that is taught at the end. This is his last public teaching, so consider that. What kind of importance would he place, what kind of care would he take to make sure that the last public sermon, I'm going to cover this, and what that might mean. The final words are a big deal, and they're important and significant. And if we've ever had a final talk with someone who has died, or can remember final words. I mean, it usually means a lot. So I think that's part of this context. Is this a parable?
A little bit.
Yes.
I don't think it is. Now, there's an illustration here, and he's using some things that people would understand, you know, shepherds and sheep and goats, but I don't know that he's actually telling a story. You know, a parable is a story, a parable is a sermon illustration, and I think he's not, I mean, it's kind of fuzzy, but I don't find this to be like some of the ones that we've already talked about. Why not? Why is this not a parable?
He's telling, I think, the reason he's here. You know.
Okay.
That's what's going to happen.
What's going to happen when he comes back?
Yeah, I think there's some clarity to this that is usually not in a parable. A parable, you have to kind of read between the lines. You have to sort of understand the illustration. And this one, while there is an illustration in it, I think he's just speaking somewhat plainly. What's the illustration here that makes us think it's a little bit like a parable?
Goats and the sheep.
Okay, goats and sheep.
Right.
So let's put the pieces together. Who are the goats and who are the sheep?
Sheep are the believers.
Isn't that the question? Okay, so the sheep are the believers. And who are the goats then?
Everybody else.
Everybody else. Okay? And what's happening to the goats and the sheep?
Being separated.
Being separated. Why are they being separated?
Because of judgment day.
Okay. What's a sheep good for?
Wool.
Wool. What's a goat good for?
Food.
Not wool.
Sheep good, goats bad.
Okay, so why in this illustration are sheep good, and goats are bad?
I just threw that out.
Oh, you just threw that out. Well, actually, no. Okay.
Wow, he's a
tough one. Okay, so who's doing the separating?
He is.
Okay, but in the story, who's doing the separating? Or it's not really a parable,
shepherd.
But it's a shepherd. There's a shepherd. What are shepherds in charge of?
Sheep,
but not goats. Do goats and sheep hang out?
Sometimes.
Apparently, yes. I'm not real big on my, you know, different farming techniques and animal husbandry, but I get the impression that sheep and goats are often found together, but they do different things. They're for different reasons. Do sheep and goats look alike?
No.
Okay. Do sheep and goats act alike?
No.
If it was, say, time to shear the sheep and gather the wool, why might you separate your sheep from your goats? If during the rest of the year you might just sort of let them graze together?
Well, you can't shear a goat.
Can't shear a goat. So they're not helpful right now. If you're getting what you need out of the sheep, then the goats are in your way. And you need to separate out so you can concentrate on the sheep. So, if in this illustration, the sheep are the believers and the goats are everyone else, and the shepherd is God, so how is this an illustration of Judgment Day?
If you have a vision of St. Peter standing at the gate saying, okay, sheep, you go in, goat, go back.
Okay.
And you know that there's a point where judgment will be made.
Okay. So at some point, judgment will be made. In the fields, it probably doesn't matter too much that the sheep and the goat are next to each other, both grazing in the field, but when it's time to gather the wool, suddenly it does make a difference.
Yeah.
And there is a point, and there is a moment, and there is a separation, and there is a judgment. Now, let's think of the first two verses real quick, because I think this is worth noting. First of all, where is Jesus preaching? Just by context again, the location?
Jerusalem.
Jerusalem is the city of... Who lives in Jerusalem for the most part?
Jews.
And he's going to be talking about the Passover and the Messiah and everything else. But this passage, is it only talking to Jews? As it starts off, is he only talking, to my Jewish people, God's chosen, I will separate. What does it actually say?
All nations.
When the Son of Man comes in his glory and the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations. Everybody. So, while his location and his message and even some of the illustrations are very Jewish, this is a message for all the world. He's the shepherd of everybody. Not just Israel. He's the shepherd of everybody. So here's that King of Kings and Lord of Lords thing. I'm not just shepherd of one flock. I am shepherd of all the flocks from every place and every time and every language and tongue and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so let's look at the actual process of separation. He will separate the nations as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. Who goes to the right hand?
Sheep.
What's important about the right hand?
Right hand of God.
Right hand of God. It's symbolic of, being on the right side of things. The right hand is the good place to be. You're my right hand man. That's to be sent to the right is good. Where are the goat's gonna go?
Left.
To his left, which is not good. The Latin word for left, anybody know it? But it's where we get the word sinister.
French.
The left. Okay. So they've now been separated. Goat, sheep, on and on. What does he say to those at his right hand?
Come,
O blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom. What about that kingdom?
Heaven.
It has been prepared for you from the foundation of the world. What happened to the foundation of the world?
Creation.
Adam and Eve.
Okay, if we want to think about the very beginning and we want to think about the fall, did God have a plan at the fall?
He must have.
Anybody remember anything about the Adam and Eve story that might consider God's plan and might talk about it or mention it?
Don't eat everything but the one apple or whatever.
Okay. So I'm thinking about the punishment, the consequences.
And that's the tree of good and evil.
That, what does God do to the serpent?
Curses
the serpent, you're going to crawl in the dust. And what does he say about the relationship between the serpent and Eve? Eve who took the apple and fell. What does he say about that relationship? It's not going to be forever. He says, from the seed of the woman, so from a descendant of the woman, will come a man, and the serpent will bite his heel, but then he will crush his head. So a descendant from Eve, born of a woman, does this sound familiar yet? Okay, incarnate from the Holy Spirit, born of the Virgin Mary, Jesus is mentioned by Paul as the second Adam. Sin comes through one man, and through the new Adam will come redemption, say. The serpent bites the heel of the man. What can we say about a serpent biting the heel of Jesus? If that's an illustration of something, what could it be?
The devil?
He had to suffer.
He had to suffer? How does he suffer?
All through the crucifixion.
What happens if you get bit by a snake? What do you think is going to happen? What's your fear?
You're going to die.
I just bit by a snake. I'm going to die. So you're bitten and you think it's over. On the cross, he is bitten by the serpent. And there's pain and there's suffering and there's the fear of death. But what happens through the cross? It looks like a defeat, but it is victory. And Christ will crush the head of the serpent. It was a plan from the beginning. And
wasn't that had to have been plan B from the beginning. Because plan A would have been everybody would have gone to heaven and to hell.
Yeah, I think it's hard to pin God down to say we know his thoughts well enough to say what's plan A and what's plan B. But if we were to talk about omniscience, knowing all things, we were talking outside of the stream of time, but you know, he's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, past, present, and future, that he knows what's going to happen, and there is a plan from the beginning, and this blessed place has been prepared, this blessed inheritance has been prepared for you from the foundations of the world. And I really like that you... it's very personal to me. It sounds very personal. It doesn't sound collective and generic in general. You all, y'all. It sounds very specific. Does it feel specific to you? Because it kind of does to me. When I do the, I've done the fraction at the communion, I do that, you know, where we receive him in faith and remember that Christ died for you. And I always give a little bit of an emphasis on the you part. And sometimes I'm even looking at people. And it's not personally. But it sort of is in the sense of I want people to hear that Christ died for you. And if it's never hit them in that moment, that it's a personal thing, that it does. At least then. Okay, so why... why are they blessed of the Father and have an inheritance for them? Like, what does he say next? Because...
I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink.
Okay. So, there is some behavior here, and let's recount it very quickly. So, who are the people that these sheep ministered to? We have people who are hungry. What else? Thirsty.
Thirsty.
What else?
Need clothes.
Need clothes or naked. What else?
Sick.
A stranger.
In prison.
And prison.
Prison.
I think that's all of them. Okay, so, hungry, thirsty, stranger, naked, sick, and in prison. So, what do you do for somebody who's hungry? Somebody who's thirsty?
Something to drink.
What do you do with a stranger?
Welcome them.
Welcome them, so they're not a stranger anymore. Make them feel at home. What about someone who's naked? Give them some clothing. You know, for modesty, for shame, for protection, for warmth. What about people who are sick?
Take care of them.
Visit them, take care of them. And in prison?
Visit them,
take care of them. Okay? And the righteous say what? What is their response to being told that they have fed Jesus and give him water, and because it does, remember what he says, for I was hungry and you gave me food. What is their response to that? And I think part of the message that really resonates for me is not that they did it, but they did not make the connection. That's the righteousness there. You know, you did the right thing, not because you thought somebody was watching.
Yeah.
You did the right thing because you're righteous. Does that make sense? Like, I didn't think about it. I just did this thing because that's what you do. But that's a righteous person. This is going to feel like an aside, but this is one of the ways it's real clear to me. I talk online with people who like, you know, comic books and superhero stories and stuff like that. And a bunch of us don't like the DC movies based off of the first one, Man of Steel, about Superman. It's an okay movie, but it's not a good Superman movie because of some weird things that happen. And if you never saw the movie, or if you don't remember because it was years ago, there's a scene when he's a teenager and he's got all these powers and stuff, and he's riding a bus, a school bus, and the bus like goes off the edge or something and it's sinking in the water, and he uses his superhuman strength to rescue the kids in the school bus, and he runs the risk of exposing himself as being amazing and weird and different. And he's talking to his dad about it, and his dad, you know, should I have saved those kids? And his dad's like, well, I don't know. But I'm worried about, you know, you exposing yourself and blah, blah, blah. And it moves on to the point where the father actually dies in a storm because he won't let his son save him and expose his identity. And while that sounds like it's an interesting story, like, but that's not Superman! Superman is a superman. He was raised by those good Kansas farm folk to do the right thing. I cannot fathom, like, even my kid, my non-superheroic children saying, well, should I have saved my classmates? Yes! Yes! Save people from drowning, for goodness sakes! You know, what? You know, consequences be darned. You do the right thing. And, you know, as far as the movies are concerned, it kind of sets up this non-heroic hero. And I'm saying that these righteous people are heroes, not because they did a heroic thing, but I think why they did the heroic thing. Why did they feed and clothe and welcome a stranger? Why did they do it?
It's
who they are. They knew it was right. This is just out of love. This is the sort of person that they are. That they take, they see need, and they care, and they do something about it.
Do what the love is as you.
They listened to the golden rule, and they actually applied it.
Right.
And, you know, do you get much of a reward for visiting someone in prison? You ever visit anybody in prison? It's not fun and happy. Sitting with a sick person, especially if they're barfing or something, is that very rewarding? No. Clothing to naked people, not rewarding. I mean, it's better to, I don't want to see that, put some clothes on. But, I mean, all these things are not in and of themselves super rewarding. You just do them because they're right. And they say, we never saw you. I mean, I definitely would have fed you, Jesus, if I saw you hungry, but I didn't see you. And what is Jesus' response?
As you did it to the least of these, you did it to me.
That's right. Yeah. When you did it to somebody else, for someone else, people who didn't have anyone else.
But for the grace of God, go watch it.
You know, and that's a true story. That, you know, how many of us, you know, could be in a position where we can know for sure we will never be hungry, ever. I don't know of anybody like that. We're thirsty. We certainly can't say we're never going to get sick. So we could be in that position ourselves. And it's God's graciousness that says, you know, we're the givers rather than the receivers in this situation, because it could have been us. Um, So the thought of, you know, entertaining angels unawares, or, you know, I think the best thing maybe that this church has done historically was through Talbot House, not just serving the meal, but the way they chose to serve it. At a time where it would be real easy to just have everybody come through the cafeteria line and here's your meal. The decision was made 20-something years ago. Nope, you're going to sit down and we're going to serve you like a restaurant, as though Jesus himself had shown up. And we're going to offer you seconds, and we're going to fill your drink, and we are going to serve you. And in my mind, it made all the difference in the world. It's a good thing to feed the hungry, but the way that those women first chose to feed the hungry, I think, says even more than the fact that they fed them. It's how they did it. Righteousness, as far as I'm concerned. Okay, well, he says the opposite to the goats. What does he say to the goats?
You didn't.
You didn't do all these things. And what's the goat's response?
We didn't win.
Yeah. I totally would have given you a sandwich, Jesus, if I ever saw you. I don't remember ever walking past you, you know, with your beard and halo and carrying a cross, and I did not give you a sandwich. I totally would have done that. And what is the response of the shepherd?
When you do it to the least, you do it for me.
And when you don't do it,
you're doing it to me.
You are not doing it for me. And that's a tough one. To get that reverse action there, that corollary, that you had the chance to serve Jesus and you didn't do it. Why didn't they do it?
Selfish.
Maybe.
Thoughtless.
Maybe.
Didn't know better.
Maybe.
Your heart wasn't in the right place.
Could be. You know, I think that we can't really know. This is one of those high speculations where the text doesn't say. We have to be careful before we make assumptions. But there could be any variety of reasons. And we've already come up with a few of them. But ultimately, the same thing that works for the righteous, that they do the right thing because of who they are, I think is then applied to the goats. They don't do it because of who they are. Now, it's possible that one of these goats, if they saw Jesus, would have given him a cup of water or a sandwich. But why does that not seem to matter so much?
Because it wasn't them. It wasn't who they actually were.
It wasn't who they were.
They would only do it because it was him.
They would only do it because it was him. You know, it was... Like, if it was something special, if I could see it clearly, or there's a reward attached, or it's obvious, I'll do it. But otherwise,
You say you'd call the press to come and take pictures.
Right, sure. You would do this service project, but you would have...
Yeah.
Good PR around recording it so that you could, you know, be known as somebody who does these good things. That what we do when we know people are paying attention makes a difference. What we do when we know that no one is paying attention makes an even greater difference. And these goats are not told you never did anything, or you never would have, so much as they just didn't. They had the chance and they didn't. I'm trying to remember who I was talking to about this, but somebody had done something really nice and really good, and I was complimenting them on that. And, you know, they were modest about it, and I think, I mean, genuinely modest. Like, you know, it's no big deal. I just did it. I said, but that's the point. Anyone could have, but nobody else did. You did. And you could have not done it. You could have very easily not done it, but you did. So thank you. And I think that's kind of where we are with this. So if there is a commandment from the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, what does that commandment, according to this passage, look like?
Do unto others.
Do unto others.
Love your neighbor as yourself.
Love your neighbor. I would say there's an interesting twist to this. So remember at Maundy Thursday, he will say, a new commandment I give to you, to love one another as I have loved you. He washes his feet and everything. And that's you know, how much, okay, love your neighbor as yourself, that's maybe here, because I love myself about this much, but how much does Jesus love me? Oh my gosh, that's a lot more. I wonder if we could not rewrite this to not just say to love your neighbor as yourself, but to love your neighbor as you love Jesus. The new commandment takes care of Jesus loving us. But maybe this one, this last public sermon, is if you want to show your love to Jesus, show it by loving someone else. The people who are in need, the people who are in your life, the people in the world. Because it's one thing, oh, Jesus, I love you. I love you, love you, love you. But then you go out and you never show it. How can you show it? Well, here's one way. Are there people hungry and thirsty and lonely and estranged and sick and in prison out there somewhere? Even today. So, love our neighbors as ourselves. I think we can't get away from that one. But maybe, just maybe, this final message of the liturgical season is going to be to love our neighbor in the manner in which we say we love Jesus. For when we do these things to the least of these, we're doing it for him.